Hey, it's Motley Fool Money co-host Dylan Lewis here. If you're listening to us, it's because you love following the stock market and learning about business stories. If you're looking to keep learning and unlocking your potential, then you should check out the Think Fast, Talk Smart podcast produced by our friends over at the Stanford Graduate School of Business. Think Fast, Talk Smart is the Webby Award-winning best business podcast that's received nearly 43 million downloads and is the number one career podcast in 95-plus countries, so you know it's worth your time. Each week, host and Stanford lecturer Matt Abraham sits down with experts to discuss the best tips to hone and develop your communication skills, from making small talk that leaves a big impression, to keeping your nerves in check while speaking, to being more persuasive. Whether you're working on your elevator pitch or planning an important meeting, strong communication skills are important in business and life in general. That's why you'll hear from pros like neuroscientist Andrew Huberman on how to manage speaking anxiety, as well as speechwriter, best-selling author, and friend of the Fool, Dan Pink, on how to take risks in your communication, and psychologist Kelly McGonigal on how to harness nervous energy to fuel powerful presentations. All that and so much more available on the Think Fast, Talk Smart podcast. So what are you waiting for? Listen every Tuesday, wherever you get your podcasts or on YouTube.
This M&A Monday comes with a big premium. Motley Fool Money starts now. Welcome to Motley Fool Money. I'm Deidre Woolard, here with Motley Fool analyst Jason Moser. Jason, good to see you. We missed you last week.
Hey, Deidre. Good to see you again. I was out of town last week, but glad to be back.
Glad to have you back, and glad to have you back for what should be a very interesting week. So around 30% of the market reports this week, a lot of big tech reporting. It's, you know, if we're getting into earnings season a little bit up and down. So what are you looking for?
Yeah, it seems like just earnings projections and guidance going forward. I mean, it's just such a funny time in the market right now. And it's reasonable to expect some of these companies to have some trepidation. But then it also feels like some of these companies really have, they're very encouraged by the economic picture they see. I mean, the economy seems to be hanging in there, right? And employment's still in a good place. But the consumer is still just so clearly stretched, right? I mean, credit card debt, student loan debt. I mean, inflation obviously is still an issue. So there are just clearly some issues there in regard to the consumer that leave us, I think, with some questions. And, you know, we had talked about this a couple weeks ago when Jamie Dimon came out with his letter for JP Morgan. And there were a lot of things he said in that letter that just sort of make you feel like, okay, maybe things are okay, but we should at least be on guard. I mean, he said, and I quote, "We may be entering," this is really, I mean, I didn't think a very profound statement. He said, "We may be entering one of the most treacherous geopolitical eras since World War II." I mean, that's a bold statement, right? And that's something to at least keep in mind, especially coming from someone like that, remains wary of economic prognosticating, and they have ongoing concerns in regard to inflation, and they're considering a wider range of outcomes as far as how companies are going to perform in regard to interest rate exposure and whatnot. So it seems a very volatile stretch right now. And this earnings season, I think, is going to be very enlightening.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the things that makes this week particularly interesting is, you know, there's been so much talk of sort of the shrinking of the formerly Magnificent Seven into following which companies are still members of that.
The Fabulous Five or something like that now. Yeah, it's so funny how that changes quarter to quarter, right?
Yeah, we will probably know something entirely different at the end of the week, which is one of the reasons for me, I really want to hear what happens on the Tesla call.
Yeah.
I need to hear it from him, and I need to hear that reaction. I mean, earnings calls are important for that reason. But I want to get into one earning that we had today. Got Verizon. You know, this is kind of a steady Eddie. It's a good, you know, good dividend player. People like having this one in their portfolios. You know, you got decent, solid results, a nice increase in cash flow. But there's a little something happening with smartphones that I've been watching and thought about last week with Taiwan Semi's earnings, talking about smartphone revenue. You know, there's a slowdown in in usage happening, in cell phone usage and getting new phones. They talked about wearables and tablets being down. This seems to have implications for Verizon, but really for tech in general.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, in regard to smartphones, I mean, it's no surprise. I mean, these things get better every iteration, right? And so then that begs the question, why should you upgrade so frequently? And for, you know, for most of us, the answer is we don't, right? We don't upgrade as often maybe as we used to. But then, I mean, you look at, I mean, I think the most obvious company that stands out here in regard to these things like phones and wearables and tablets, whatnot, I mean, let's look at Apple.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at last quarter for Apple, the wearables, home and accessories segment of the business, that revenue came in down 11% from the previous year. iPad revenue was down 25% from the previous year. So, you know, I mean, Verizon calling this out, I don't think that's a cop out. I mean, that's not something they're not looking for an excuse. I mean, I think it's something very real. And it's absolutely something to keep in mind.
Well, the other thing I'm watching with Verizon and really with all the telecoms is this, what they call cord cutting 2.0, which is the rise of fixed home internet, taking some of the juice away from cable. Not a massive trend at this point, but it's interesting. Verizon's up to about 3.4 million subscribers. T-Mobile's got around 5 million. Seems like something is starting to happen here. I mean, you've probably seen all of those commercials kind of pushing back against, you know, oh, it's not reliable or it gets jammed up, which whenever I see a commercial that's telling me something is bad, I'm like, okay, that means something's happening here. I should pay attention to.
I think you should pay attention to it. We've kind of gone from where it wasn't reliable to where it was reliable some of the time. And now it's certainly becoming more and more reliable as time goes on. So I think companies should absolutely keep an eye on this. I mean, again, looking to other companies in the space that are good indicators. I mean, I look at Comcast, for example, in regard to something like this. You go back to Comcast most recent quarter on the call, and they talked about maintaining what they said a strong trajectory in Xfinity Mobile, right? They increased their subscriber lines by 24%. They increased total domestic wireless revenue by nearly 20%. So while I don't know that Verizon is necessarily a full-on threat to a company like Comcast, it definitely feels like there is a shift going on here. In companies like Verizon, I mean, they're very well set up to succeed here. And as we move more and more to this wireless sort of environment, I mean, it seems reasonable to think that a company like Verizon could absolutely disrupt the business of some of those cable providers like Comcast. And by the same token, it's good to see that Comcast is finding solutions, right? I mean, they've got the Xfinity Mobile. I mean, they got the domestic wireless revenue. I mean, that's something that you pay attention to. So, it does feel like Verizon and its wireless brethren are taking a lead here, but I don't know that they're necessarily being fully disrupted yet.
Well, it's a Monday, so we get to talk some mergers and acquisitions. One today right up my alley, CoStar, a company I follow. You've probably seen their commercials for homes.com and apartments.com recently. Yep. They're buying Matterport. Now, if you haven't heard of Matterport, they do those cool 3D tours. You've probably seen them if you look at real estate listings. The premium here is crazy. So they're buying for $1.6 billion, and that works out to $5.50 per share. The shareholders are going to get half of that in cash, half of that in stock. Over 200% premium on the last closing price. Last time I looked, the stock was up about 188% or something crazy like that this morning.
A good day.
Everybody is asking why. Why is CoStar, which has commercial data and real estate data, why are they buying a 3D tour company? Everybody has an opinion. I've been talking to people all morning. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not actually very surprised by this. I mean, I will go back to something I tweeted way back on January 4th of 2022. As you know, I mean, one of the services I run here at The Fool, it's a service based on augmented reality and immersive technology. And I tweeted then on January 4th, 2022, the value in digitizing, in indexing the built world is going to be huge. Wouldn't shock me at all to see Alphabet acquire Matterport this year. Mm-hmm. Search and ad revenue and expertise, those metaverse tailwinds. It was a reckless prediction, but it seemed like at least at the time that Matterport fit very much into that sort of Alphabet Google universe, so to speak. So I'm not terribly surprised to see Matterport ultimately be acquired. But by the same token, if you go back to, you know, when I said that, I mean, I think the stock price was, I think it closed that day at around $18.22. And so clearly from then until now, a lot has happened. I mean, Matterport was a SPAC, and that I think probably at the end of the day, most people, we look at SPACs and think, well, that's not been a very good thing for most companies. For Matterport, I mean, I give them credit. At least they've stayed in business, right? They've kept things going. It doesn't surprise me, at least, to see Matterport be acquired because of that specialty, what they do. I mean, it's a digital capture and spatial data company, right? They digitize and they index information based on this built world. And they have a lot of information already gathered. And so to see them acquired, it doesn't really surprise me. What I said back then when I first tweeted that in 2022, I mean, obviously the share price was a lot higher. It's good to see at least shareholders get some value from this. You know, we'll see. I mean, I don't know if it's something where ultimately CoStar just takes this business, kind of rolls it in, and we never hear anything again from Matterport. But clearly they're acquiring Matterport for the data and for the information that it had already gathered. And there was absolutely some value in that.
There's a lot of value in that. And I think that's interesting, because if Alphabet had bought it, that would have been more of a tech play to get more of the cameras and the tools that they have, the apps that they've built and things like that.
Yeah.
CoStar buys it, you know, it's a data play. So there's a part of this that makes me a little sad about it as someone who's seen what Matterport has done, because I think it curbs everything that they've been building. I think that it'll stay the way it is, and I think they'll keep building the, you know, digital twins and things like that. But I don't know if the level of innovation is going to continue. I mean, CoStar has been pretty good at keeping companies independent, but I'm not sure that's what they want with this. I think they want it for Homes.com. I think they want it for Zillow, but to, you know, as competition. But I don't know. It's so hard to know how they're going to use it, because they've got these two businesses going in different directions. And I don't know which side it ends up on.
Well, I think what you're saying makes sense, and it really does make you wonder. And I guess we will never really know the answer to this, but it does make you wonder if Matterport was able to just keep on doing what they were doing. I mean, would they have been able to kind of get around that corner and start to take this business in a direction that could have produced a lot more value?
Thanks for your time today, Jason.
Thank you.
We talk about a lot of stocks on the show, but it's just a peek at the Motley Fool's investing universe. This year, we're rolling out a new offering. It's called Epic Bundle. The service includes 7 stock recommendations every month, model portfolios, and stock rankings, all based on your investor type. We're offering Epic Bundle to Motley Fool Money listeners at a reduced rate as a thanks for listening to the show. So for more information, head to fool.com/epic. We'll also include a link in the show notes for you. If you want some On running shoes, you're not getting a discount. Same goes for the stock. Sanmeet Deo joins Ricky Mulvey to give a breakdown of the fast-growing athleisure company.
If you want a fast-growing company, you might have to pay up. Let's see what's going on with On Holdings, which listeners might recognize as expensive running shoes with cushioned hollow pods in the midsole, or some holes for those not into that vocabulary. The On Clouds, very popular running shoes. Sanmeet, let's start with the product. Why are these shoes so special, or catching on so quickly among the consumer attention base?
Yeah, Ricky. So at the core of what makes them so special is that they have this cloud tech technology, which kind of blends comfort and performance. It kind of arose out of the founders, Olivier Bernhardt, who's a Swiss triathlete, experimentation with garden hoses to create like a safer and more comfortable shoe. You know, and in addition to that, they're just fresh. They're unique looking. They have the cloud in the soles. They sport kind of like that famous Swiss design element. And, you know, they've caught on with the tech scene, influencers, and just casual wearers while it's kind of becoming a lifestyle brand.
Are you a wearer? An on-wearer?
I'm not actually. I'm curious to try them out. I've always been a Nike guy.
I'm wondering who the closest competitor would be for this product. It's like a high-end kind of running shoe. I would think Hoka? Is Hoka their closest competitor?
Yeah, Hoka is definitely a close competitor. If I've found numerous reviews and discussions online just comparing Hokas with On Clouds, and they're both primarily running shoes with different features. And the search trends, actually, if you look on Google, are kind of neck and neck for both of them over the past few years.
Yeah, and Lululemon would like to be a competitor, especially in this space. We were talking before that you think those shoes are a little boring. I don't know. My opinion on this matter matters very, very little.
Yeah, you know, while Lulu is like a powerhouse in the athleisure market with premium apparel, I feel like their footwear line is kind of like a side bet to kind of capture some growth. You know, they've rolled out men's and women's footwear, and in my opinion, they're kind of bland looking. And you know, but we'll see how it goes with them.
So the highest profile association for On is Roger Federer. He's also an investor in the company. You want to look at that high profile athlete, the high profile figure. How important is that Federer relationship to On Holdings? You know, is this guy selling a lot of shoes?
I think it's pretty important. You know, On Holdings, if you don't know, is a Swiss company, is based out of Switzerland. So as a brand ambassador, he has massive appeal in Europe. They know him very well. He's very well loved. You know, he is an investor. He actually assists in designing shoes with On, specifically now for like their growing tennis shoe category. So he's important, although I wouldn't put him in the category of Jordan and Nike, where, you know, if Jordan was gone, then Nike would just have completely collapsed. I don't think that On's necessarily there with Federer, but he is important.
One flag for the company, there's a few flags, one of which I think is the valuation, one of which is a co-CEO situation, which sort of perks my interest a little bit, Sammeet, but not in a great way. You have Mark Maurer and Martin Hoffman, both of whom have been with the company since 2013. Is this a flag for you? Is this a Salesforce thing going on? You know, co-CEO situations rarely seem to go well.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely makes me wonder. But with the way On is structured, I'm actually a little less concerned because Martin is actually more of is the CFO. Mark is the chief operating officer. So while they're both co-CEOs, they're still kind of dedicated to their specific roles within their company. So, you know, I'm not so concerned. And also, being a Swiss company, I don't really know how the co-CEO dynamic works in international companies versus how it works in the United States. It could be different.
Fair enough. Let's talk about that valuation. On, which has the ticker symbol On, trades at a much higher multiple than many of its peers. It's almost 6x sales and 42x forward earnings. For context, Lululemon and Deckers, which makes Hoka, they're both in the mid-20s for forward earnings. You know, what has to be true about On's future growth for this valuation to make sense?
Yeah, you know, On is definitely pricey when you look at it just from the valuation multiple. One thing I also like to look at when in comparison is, you know, On has leading gross margins that are approaching 60%, whereas Deckers is around 55, Lulu is around 58. The mix of business is a little different. On is pure play shoes right now, little apparel. Deckers is shoes primarily. Lulu is mostly apparel. And I also like to look at their growth estimates, sales and earnings estimates for On are much, much higher than Deckers and Lulu. So, you know, in order to kind of get that valuation to make it look sense, they do need to grow sales and earnings at a fast clip that's heavily embedded into their business. They need to maintain those industry leading margins. And, you know, they need to kind of take advantage of all those white space opportunities within the different shoe categories and also ramping up that apparel portion of their business from what's around 5% to about 10% is what they're looking at for the future.
They're also opening some retail locations, which might help with that growth opportunity. And one thing we were talking about before the show that I think is worth bringing up and seen in those margins, On does not really discount its shoes, it seems.
No, they're kind of taking the Lululemon approach, where they're not a discounter. They're premium priced. They're playing in that high price category, which separates them a little bit from the Hokas and from the other shoes out there. So they're who knows what will happen in the future, but they're playing in that category, which I think, you know, with high demand, they can take advantage of that.
So of the athleisure group I mentioned, there sure are some bears out for the On shares. It has a pretty high percent of shares outstanding shorted at about 9% versus for Lululemon and Deckers, that kind of hovers around 3%. So what are the bears saying about this company?
Yeah, I mean, you know, with the high growth opportunities that it has, it's definitely much more riskier than the other companies. I'm sure the bears are concerned about just the high embedded growth assumptions embedded in its valuation. If it doesn't meet some of those targets, the stock's going to get dinged hard. They're probably worried also about the potential for it to be a fad along the lines of Allbirds. Allbirds was hot for a while and then kind of flamed out. You know, these things, you know, these shoe brand, footwear brands and, you know, consumer products come and go. Their apparel business, it may not stick. There's a lot of competition there as well. And then also maybe not growing internationally. So those are some of the things that bears are probably concerned about.
However, I know you're a big fan of the athleisure space. This is a little different than Allbirds. You can't really go running in the wool shoes that they were selling. And then some of those shoes were falling apart, but you have a lot of focus on the athleisure space. Even if you're not looking at On Holdings as an investor, why is this macro opportunity worth a stock investor's attention?
Yeah, you know, I like the athleisure space. It's a huge market opportunity. It's growing. It's from the pandemic, more and more people are wearing athleisure as a lifestyle brand, as a casual. They're wearing casual clothes to more outings. It's kind of become your lifestyle, but it's also a place where there's a lot of innovation, a lot of freshness, a lot of new names and exciting opportunities. And it's also something that's in demand and used regularly by consumers. You know, you're always buying new shoes, apparel, and so it's an industry where consumers are always going to spend money.
All right. Anything else the investing audience should know about the leadership of this company?
Yeah, you know, one important point is that On has heavy insider ownership, you know, with the directors and executives owning about 33% of the total economic ownership and 67% of the total voting power. Now, while the voting power can be somewhat of a concern because they control a lot of the business, I do like how well vested the management team is in the business. So they want to see it succeed.
Let's finish off with a little bit of a game. There's a few companies in the athleisure space that you can buy. So I'm going to call this, let's call it wear, invest, and trash. We have a brand to wear, a brand that is earning our investment dollars, and one that we will recycle. Trashing is not kind to the environment, and this is coming out on Earth Day, Sanmeet. So wear, invest, recycle. How about that?
That sounds
great.
No one
can get upset at us now. So the three brands, we have On Holdings, we have Lululemon. This might be an easier one. Under Armour. Which one are you wearing? Which one are you investing in? And which one is going to be recycled in an environmentally friendly way? Happy Earth Day.
All right. So in honor of Earth Day, I'll take the recycling first. So I'm going to recycle Under Armour. The business has just not been managed very well. They have some pretty good products, but a lot of their products when are sold discounted. And like we were talking about it earlier, you know, when you see it on lots of kids and you see people wearing Under Armour, the stuff that I bought from Under Armour typically tends to be from outlets and from discounting. So I would definitely recycle Under Armour. Where I would actually wear Lulu, because they have great products that are stylish and look great. And, you know, I have not always been able to afford them, but I definitely love to wear them. And invest, I would invest in On Holdings. I'm actually an investor in On Holdings because I think the growth opportunity is going to be great for that company.
Good place to end it. Sammy Deo, thank you for your time and your insight.
All right. Thanks, Ricky.
As As always, people on the program may have interest in the stocks they talk about, and The Motley Fool may have formal recommendations for or against. So don't buy or sell stocks based solely on what you hear. I'm Deidre Woolard. Thanks for listening. We'll see you tomorrow.